Jim provided me a wonderful line from Cole Porter. Times have changed, and we often rewound the clock. When pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock, if today we tried to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock would have landed on them. There is no holiday, there is no moment of family togetherness that some godforsaken right-winger will not attack and try to make miserable because we have not yet. Because we have not yet bowed our knees to their monstrous intent. And so it is that we go away from Moran Monday. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed being here with you. Thanks to everybody who makes it all go. Thanks to you, first and foremost, who contribute to keep the horn going. Thank you very, very much. You know who you are. We're at the end of November, and we could sure need, use some help. Very few people carrying a lot of the weight. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. To our cavalcade of crazy columnist, Reverbo. Thanks to Matt Osborne, OsborneInc.com, our Southeast correspondent. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, musical consultant. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He proved his dedication even this evening. I had to bug him at work because the server had crashed before showtime, and he got it back up and running, bless his heart. WhiteRoseSociety.org. My head writer is David in Tennessee. All of this happens in part because of the continued support of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They are, in fact, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Golly Moses, you know what? It's been weird. The last month or so, sort of herky-jerky, sort of one step forward, two steps back, can't quite get it in gear, clutch pops out, kind of. And you know what? It's going to stay that way for a while, at least for another week. But you know, welcome to a new week of broadcasting. I'm so glad to be here. I'm glad you're here. You know, we're gonna have a little bit of fun. Because after all, it's Moran Monday, right? Right. First, a program note. Here's how it all shakes out. Theoretically, on Wednesday, I have to get in the rusty red pickup truck and drive to Nashville, Tennessee. Nash Vegas, if you will. Because down there at Opryland, they're having a conference of science teachers. And we received word some months back that the filthy coal industry and their with their imaginary science had planned on having a table down there so that they could get them science teachers all nice and on the straight and narrow talking about how coal is so good for America and Jesus loves coal. Right?
Right.
So, that means, you know, the one thing that you know how I describe Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And one thing that Coal River Mountain Watch understands is that it is absolutely necessary never to cede or concede a particular medium or field of battle, if you will, although I don't care much for war-based analogies, but we'll use that one. You never concede it to the other side and let them just sit there and spew their filth and not be able to counteract them with some actual, real, live, honest-to-jeebus science. So that's why Wednesday I'm going to go down to Nash Vegas, theoretically. And I'll be gone Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then we'll get a regular show up and going the following week. And I hope, we should be normal for a while after that, to the extent that normal is anything other than a setting on a dryer, as our dear friend Peter Godbold has frequently noted. So that's what that is. But I say theoretically because the rusty red pickup truck is in the shop insofar as it has no brakes. Yeah, driving from here to Nashville on no brakes would be, they would have sort of a Slim Pickens, yee-haw quality to it, but too much for me. So, we're going to find out if I'm going to be able to drive to Nash Vegas, hopefully late tomorrow evening or early Wednesday morning. I need to be there. Because with something, when you consider all the other places where science is under assault by the right wing, we don't need another layering on of imaginary BS, made up, ginned up, dummied up, faked up, rubed up, frauded up crap from the coal industry. Because, you know, truth is not their long suit. Illusion and profit, that's mostly their long suit, not truth or facts. Coal sludge is perfectly good for ye. No. So that's the skinny on the coming week. You know, if I can't get down there, then I'm right here behind the microphone all week long, and won't that be nice? So that's how that works out. But that's just programming announcements and stuff like that. We are nearing the end of the month. We are nearing the end of November. And I can tell you with absolute certainty that we will not get within screaming distance of this month's fundraising goal, the same fundraising goal that we have every month. We will not get within screaming distance of it, but I want to thank all of you who have made the effort to make sure that we get closer than we otherwise would have, because every little bit helps, you know, when it comes time to pay all the various and sundry bills that come with keeping this whole enterprise going. So that's that. It is. It really is. No kidding. I feel like I haven't done the show in a week. I mean, I'm just a little kind of, I don't know, maybe a little bit off my game, but we'll find it as we go along. Yeah, there it is. The soothing dulcet tones of our Moran Monday theme. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. We have Morans on Morans upon Morans. We are standing literally upon the shoulders of Morans. Step right up. Hurry, hurry. Right behind this thin electronic veil, you will find more right-wing Morans than you can even imagine.
and all for the low, low, low cost of less than 5 cents per hour of programming here on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, step right up. Get up and stand up on something, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Remember, you can't tell your morans without a program, and this is the program by which you can tell your morans. You just can't tell them much. Remember, after all, they're morans. Right? Yeah, exactly. Where to start? You know what? I've got an idea. Let's start with something that is absolutely, perfectly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, fitting and appropriate for Moran Monday. Fox Nation. Fox Nation is a website. Fox Nation is a website where they, they put up, it's a right-wing website. What do you want? I mean, you know, birthers, deathers, tenthers, DNAers, booger eaters, they're all there. And we know what your average Fox viewer, Fox listener, Fox, well, reader, you know, if you count having your lips move while you're actually silently reading the website. Readers, sure, why not? We know what they're like. In other words, atne, ute, itbre, if you one, what I ene me? Mm-hmm, yes. But somehow in the last week or so, they've really outdone themselves, the morans at Fox Nation and Fox News. The story was first broken by Mediaite, which is kind of a dodgy little website. But they got this one right. You and I have been to the Onion a million times, right? Yeah, we know it's a satire site. We know it's hilarious. But more than anything else, we know that it's not real. Because you, me, we, we have IQs, individual, not collectively, or average, we have IQs that are well above freezing. The same may not be said for the right-wing gooberheads over at Fox, or who watch Fox. See, that's the thing. That's the moran part of this. The people who run this show, Fox Nation, they understand, you see, they're not morans. They're cynics. They're cynics of the worst kind, because they know that their viewers and their readers are morans. And so it was that, just last week, what was it? That was the 27th. Yeah. Mediaite noticed that FoxNation.com had posted an Onion article without ever mentioning that it was satire. Headline, FoxNation.com reposts anti-Obama article from The Onion, doesn't mention it's a joke. Because a piece came out from The Onion, it was quite funny, especially in light of how we've tended to become to view poor president, not sure. The Onion piece was titled, Frustrated Obama Sends Nation Rambling 75,000-Word Email. Come on. 75,000-word email? Everybody within range of my voice just went, ah. How do you not know that that's a joke?
And I guess John Bershad of Mediaite is asking something similar because he says, most people recognize The Onion as the Peabody Award-winning satire machine that it is. Some people, however, don't. Which is why we get a story like this every few months. Of course, it's sometimes easy to mistake an Onion article for the real thing since the writers make sure to skew as close to their targets as possible. How can, no, if you know what The Onion is, you can't make that mistake. But the guy's trying to be a little bit charitable. He says it also doesn't hurt when real news outlets reprint the satirist's work and decide not to let their readers know it's a joke, as Fox Nation did today. That was the 26th. Yes, the Fox Nation editors were apparently so enamored with an Onion piece entitled Frustrated Obama Sends Nation Rambling 75,000-Word Email that they reposted the first two paragraphs in their culture section with nary a sign as to its fictional nature. The only thing that would have clued anybody into anything was the fact that they actually linked to the whole Onion piece at the bottom of their posting. So what does that say? That says that the people who run Fox know that Emery and Eileen out there in flyover country, gumming their oatmeal, wearing their house helmets with their little elbow and knee pads on, are ripe fodder. At this point, Fox has become an intensely, deeply inside joke on itself. At this point, it's like Andy Kaufman taking everybody for cookies and milk. The only person who's in on the gag is the person making the gag. And then there are the actual morons. The actual morons. In other words, the readers. Who posted comments about Frustrated Obama Sends Nation Rambling 75,000-word email. If this story is correct, that he did send out this email, it is very concerning about his current state of mental health. I'm surprised he would be allowed to send something like this out, and if he is not functioning very well, why there isn't some attention being paid to his current state. That's your kinder, gentler moron. Then there's this guy. Hey, you fraud! Get out! Your presidency is an affront to the exceptionalism of America, pathetic loser! And then this. Ha 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 ha, Obama. Unraveled. Epic failure. Impeach it. It. Now, you can't go and find this because it's all been disappeared down the memory hole because Fox Nation got caught. But here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. So they got caught doing that on the 26th. Well, it turns out that Fox Nation had done it previously. That was not a one-off. It was not a screw-up. It's what proves that Fox has created a sort of self-actualizing inside joke on its own consumers. On the 23rd of November, again, posted in its culture section at foxnation.com, another Onion piece. Onion, Obama outlines moral philosophical justifications for turkey pardon. No kidding. It's a photograph from the turkey pardon. And the caption, President Obama announces plans to deliver a two-hour speech explaining his reasons for granting clemency to Cranberry, the Thanksgiving turkey.
Oh, God.
And again, no clue. No clue for their sad, weird little readers that Fox Nation was having another one at their expense. This isn't shark jumping. This is an out-and-out confession on the part of Fox Nation that they know they're in the fraud business, and they don't much care what kind of the asses they make of their readers. Stunning, isn't it? And what it boils down to is a recognition, wouldn't you say, on the part of Fox, that they really are manipulating a bunch of idiots. I had an exchange with our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I had a great post for Thanksgiving week. I hope you all went and read it. We were going back and forth about some stuff, and there was in the piece that I sent him, there was a line, "After all, this is a democracy, and one idea is just as good as another." That's the quote. Reverbo says, "Could easily be a quote from Homer Simpson, who could probably be as good a president as anyone." Ain't that the sick truth these days, though? I mean, if we don't consider the 99 flat, stupid, or dangerous ideas out of 100, we're just not being fair and balanced. Although, funny that that obligation only seems to be thrown in the face of the left. What an observation. If we don't consider the 99 flat, stupid, or dangerous ideas out of 100, and treat those 99, by extension, and treat those 99 as if they are just as valid as the one that is sane, then somehow we're not doing justice. John Fox noting a comment from Raw Story, "Fox Nation readers confuse Onion article with real news." Hell, why not? Fox Nation readers confuse Fox with real news. Perfect. Perfectly said. But I'm not trying to overstate things, but from a Moran Monday standpoint, this really is another one of those little signposts on the road to the apocalypse, isn't it? We're screwed. We know that Fox is having one off on its viewership, readership, what a knuckle walker, mouth breathing droolership. We know it, and Fox knows it, but I guess maybe you could say that Fox is just following W.C. Fields' third commandment, huh? Don't smarten up a chump. They knew it was a joke. It was David in Tennessee who first pointed this out to me. Fox News knew it was a joke, and they posted it to their little cultists anyway. They despise their own audience. Is that as mind-boggling to you as it is to me? Yeah. But it's Moran Monday. And there's a million things to go through. And I guess we wouldn't be doing justice to a fairly important story without mentioning that by virtue of the WikiLeaks issue, a whole bunch of the United States government has been, I don't know, self-nominated as recipients on Moran Monday. I think we can safely say that the entire United States diplomatic corps, or at least in large part under George W. Bush, but some of it under the Obama administration, has been outed. Not as in had their, no. not as in had their identity, no. Outed in terms of and the thing is, everybody talks about everybody else. Everybody gossips. But WikiLeaks has our gossip. They have our gossip. And it turns out that we're all, you know, the entire U.S. diplomatic corps finds itself going to various heads of state. Oh, man, I'm sorry. You know, I said that when I was drinking. And I've quit drinking now. And I'm going through the 12-step program. And I've gotten to that point where I have to go around and ask everybody to forgive me. Please? And it goes on. And, I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. A lot of stuff that maybe you and I were not surprised by. And some of the stuff that maybe we actually already knew. But we didn't know some of the stuff about, oh, pick some. I didn't know the stuff about the dictator of Qatar, who turns out to be a big fan of Iran. Not that I think that there's anything, well. But what I find more interesting out of the WikiLeaks case is the response of the right wing. Did you see some of this stuff over the course of the weekend? The right wing, among other things, has called for the Obama administration to declare WikiLeaks and Julian Assange to be terrorists. There's stuff that's in there, and there's stuff that's not. But, of course, the right-wing media is not constrained by facts. Witness the foregoing conversation about Fox Nation posting stuff from The Onion and not telling their knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, dribbling, drooling followers that it wasn't real. Well, I guess you could say that there's the other side of that continuum as well, because we've got the Washington Times, who just made up stuff that was inside the WikiLeaks dump. Headline, Washington Times. Remember, this is the Mooney Times. This is not the Wahoo Po. This is the Washington Times, run by Reverend Moon, and is nothing but a one great big dead tree dog whistle. And this headline appeared: WikiLeaks releases State Department reports. Documents reveal China's role in shipments of nukes to Iran. Now, a lot of people have been through the WikiLeaks stuff. Guess what? There's nothing in it, at least not what's been released so far, about China having a role in shipment of nukes to Iran. Because, among other things, there's no evidence of nuclear weapons in Iran. Even the Israelis had to sort of admit to themselves and the rest of the world that that was the case a week or so ago. We don't have any. But that doesn't stop the right-wing media machine from just making crap up. WikiLeaks releases State Department reports. Documents reveal China's role in shipments of nukes to Iran. Not even remotely true. That doesn't even slow them down, not being true. Oh, but there is a right-wing frenzy out there, and lots of talk, oh, this will put our in harm's way, and it's now dangerous national security. No security, national security. It goes on and on and on. And see, the thing is, I don't have a problem with WikiLeaks. Because the United States is, and you know what, I'm freely willing to accept anyone's criticism that I am too much an idealist. But the United States was conceived as an open society. Not authoritarian, not clamped down, at least not in the sense that others were at the time of our founding. And I'm of the opinion, and I recognize that it's opinion, I'm not asserting fact here, just opinion, that an open society should not be very good at keeping secrets. And it turns out we're not. And now we're getting our dirty laundry aired in front of the entire world, and frankly, a nation that started two wars in the space of 2 years against countries that had not even lifted a finger against us deserves to be embarrassed like this. We deserve this. Marty noting by email, nothing like getting one's dirty laundry aired out. I can hear Judge Louis Brandeis spinning faster than the Tasmanian devil in his grave. Will this sunlight, Marty asks, be a good disinfectant? And it all depends on how we deal with it. So far, it appears that we're dealing with it by saying that this is somehow WikiLeaks' fault. Which it ain't. Oh, Jesus, John. Here's John Fox. Here's two folks in agreement on WikiLeaks you wouldn't expect. Or would you? Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and Alex Jones both think that WikiLeaks is CIA. Oh, nutters, indeed, John. Ah, they're CIA. Isn't there some medicine we could get for Alex Jones that would make him all better? But we've kind of earned this, haven't we? It seems to me we have. Because we started this war. And we did so immorally, and it persists to this day. And for as long as we continue to prosecute these wars, we sort of earn what's coming from it. It's a little bit like the TSA thing. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about the TSA thing, and you might get a little pissed off with me. But there is something about the TSA kerfuffle that has me bothered. It just doesn't sit right. It's too perfect. Right after the midterm elections, you've got other pressing, serious news stories out there. And the next thing you know, you've got people running around hollering about we're getting our constitutional rights are being taken away from us because of pat-downs in the line going onto an airplane. Now, work with me here, because above all things, I want to point out that the one thing that is not happening in the great TSA outrage is there's not a hell of a lot of sober, calm, sane, reasonable discussion. Not a lot. It's quite possible there's not any. But I really would like to foster some. Do I like the idea of somebody's hands going over my body? No, not necessarily. Unless it maybe it's like Agnes and, you know, a couple of glasses of wine and are involved. But I'm not going there. No, so I'm not crazy about it. But the question is, and understand, I know that the professional terrorist, that's what I mean by pros, wouldn't stand in line with a dynamite belt on. The people that you catch at airport security, to the extent that anyone gets caught, are the idiots. You know, the Richard Reeds, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber. And you could make an argument that maybe the other side plans for those people to be caught. This is, after all, the back and forth of a sort of deadly little chess game. So I understand outrage, and I understand being pissed off, And I understand not wanting to be touched. And I understand also the misgivings about the radiation that comes from the scanners. And the outrage of people, you know, not wanting to have themselves seen through all the way to their skeletons. I get that. But I can't stand, and it's just because I am the way I am, I cannot stand bad arguments. And there are two that are floating around out there that just drive me crazy. One is, well, these TSA pat-downs violate my Fourth Amendment rights. Bull! Now, I will certainly defer to anyone who has a greater understanding of the Fourth Amendment than I do, but let me explain why I say bull. The Fourth Amendment is sort of plain, I mean, it's really unequivocal in its text. Let me get the text of the Fourth Amendment up here. Here we go. The Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution reads as follows. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Right? But even in that fairly straightforward piece of language, there's still some wiggle room. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. That means you have to define unreasonable. Is it unreasonable to ask people to submit to some sort of search process whereby it can be verified that they don't have the capability of bringing down an airliner with 200 or 300 or 400 or 500 people on it? I don't know how many people 747 holds, frankly. But is that unreasonable? Would it be unreasonable if instead of the body scanners we were using vicious, snarling, bomb-sniffing dogs? I don't know. But I do know that even that plain language has been interpreted by the Supreme Court down through the centuries. Where are we now? 230 some odd years of this nation, and a good 200 plus of it being under the Constitution. The courts have interpreted the Fourth Amendment, because courts do that. And they have stated that question of reasonableness is determined in part by where you are. You have the highest degree of an expectation of privacy in your own home. But the further you get from home, that expectation of privacy goes down. Now, I'm not saying that the TSA thing is okay. I didn't say that. But I am saying that we're not doing a very good job of talking about it. And in this age, where the right wing has the ability to manufacture an outrage the outrage of the minute and have it circle the globe before reality has a chance to get its pants on, I'm suspicious. I'm very suspicious. Because I don't see, and granted, I don't practice law, I'm not a lawyer, but I did sit through 3 years of law school and I got a little sheepskin. And I don't know of anything going on with the TSA thing that involves the Fourth Amendment at all. Because it seems to me that, like, just as, okay, you're toddling down the road, you've had a few too many, you get pulled over, and the cop takes you in, and he says, blow in this. And you say, I don't want to. And he says, well, okay, I'll wait 30 minutes. And if you still won't blow then, well, I'll just turn in the paperwork and we'll take your license. And you, of course, being a constitutionalist, are outraged. How dare you? Well, they can do that because you impliedly consented upon taking that driver's license to be tested for your sobriety pretty much upon probable cause. It's called implied consent. And to a certain extent, you consent when you get in that line, when you buy that airplane ticket and get in that line, you consent to security measures to make sure that you're not carrying something on there to blow up the damn plane. So, no Fourth Amendment, no constitutional rights issues. And it drives me crazy that people objecting to this are saying, well, our constitutional rights are being trampled. Which ones? Which ones? Just tell me. Because I've gotten so very disgusted and paranoidized and everything over the course of the last months with all these godforsaken teabaggers. Our constitution's under attack from that fascist, Islamist, Kenyan, Obama is not American. He's going to destroy our Constitution. Our Marvelline, that brown Kenyan's going to kill America because he's got a deep-seated hatred of white people because I just heard Glenn Beck tell us so, and Glenn Beck wouldn't be on the air unless he was telling the truth, Marvelline. You see? Do you know what I mean? There's no constitutional rights at issue in the TSA security line. There's elements of human dignity, okay. Elements of trauma, perhaps, or post-traumatic stress for people who have been through things that this exacerbates, okay. There's indignity and annoyance. But there's no constitutional issues. Now, if you know of one and I don't, and you can tell me, please do. And the other thing is, the guy who got the ball rolling out in San Diego, who said... If you touch me there, I'll have you arrested. Man, that sounds ballsy, doesn't it? But arrested for what, Perry Mason? Oh, okay, battery. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Battery. Because we've discussed before that in order to have a battery committed against you, somebody doesn't have to slug you. It's just an unconsented two-touching of an insulting or provoking nature. But we've already talked about the fact that there is consent implied in standing there to get on the plane. And so by definition, it can't be an unconsented to touching because you have consented because you are standing there. I smell a rat. I smell a big old right-wing rat. Because this is nothing but a Kobayashi Maru for Barack Obama. Star Trek reference? Ding. An unwinnable situation. A no-win situation. There is, because, well, you know how the right-wing messages. Again, back to the lead story. Fox News will have a lie around a planet like threads wrapped around a new baseball before the facts can get out of bed. And it is not protecting us like George Bush done. Jesus, where were they when George Bush wanted this stuff in the first place and it got stopped the first time around? You see what I'm saying? No battery, no Fourth Amendment issues, no Fifth Amendment issues.
Jesus, I'd give them another day and a half before they're complaining that not being a... When? Come on, tell me. When? You predict. I'm not going to do this. When does the press release come out from the National Republican and Rifle Association claiming that Barack Obama is abusing our Second Amendment constitutional rights to keep and bear arms by not letting us take our goddamn guns on the goddamn plane? You tell me. Maybe it's already out there. Ignorance frustrates me. I hate, and I think it's okay to use the word hate. I hate ignorance. Especially by people who don't want to be relieved of their ignorance, who wallow in it, Fox viewers. I hate it. Because it's, you know, you can see a cancer cell under a microscope. We can use x-rays and dyes and stuff to see clogged arteries in the human body. But we have yet to come up with a diagnostic tool that can read the vapors of ignorance that just emanate from these godforsaken right-wingers. And the problem is, as Fox proves, it's more contagious than the Ebola virus. And just as deadly. It goes on and on and on. You remember when Dr. Laura went on her nigger fest? A couple of months ago, and her sponsors ran away from her in droves, making her no longer commercially viable. And she said that she had to give up her job as a broadcaster, as a right-wing, hate-mongering harpy. So she could get her First Amendment rights back? I think we even talked about it then. No one violated her First Amendment rights. The First Amendment is a guard against governmental intrusion upon or suppression of or repression of speech. And Premier Radio Networks, or whoever it was that syndicated her, was not the government. Granted, right-wingers and teabaggers and the like would like to have American corporations be the government. And they have certainly gone a long way toward co-opting themselves into the government. But thus far, it ain't. Oh, it drives me crazy! And that's why I'm including it on More and Monday. It drives me crazy! When I hear... I mean, yes, we make judgments. We make them all the time. It's kind of like everybody gossips about everybody else, and we just got caught in the WikiLeaks thing, gossiping about the rest of the planet. And it's embarrassing. But everybody has things they're wrong about, stuff they don't know. I recognize that. I'm one of them. But dadgummit! The minute, it's one of those little telltale signs. The minute that I hear somebody say, do you remember the John Rocker controversy back in the 90s? He was a hotshot relief pitcher for the Atlanta Braves. Well, you're going to talk about sports, I guess. No, stop. Don't turn away yet. He made some idiotic comment about not wanting to ride a train in New York because he'd sit next to somebody with AIDS. Or somebody of color. He was a real idiot. And the next thing you know, he's catching hell for it. And I actually hear the state of West Virginia's leading talk show host, a right-winger, of course, talking about how John Rocker's First Amendment rights to free speech were being violated. Really? Stan Kasten, the president of the Atlanta Braves at the time, is suddenly the government? And so when I hear these things, I know immediately that I'm dealing with a person who has no understanding, no functioning understanding of the civic structure of this country. Oh, and David in Tennessee tells me, by the way, that no, it's already happening with the guns. Judge Napolitano, again, on Fox last Friday, said restriction of firearms made 9/11 possible. This ain't funny, McGee. Scott in Massachusetts, who has been at play in the fields of the law, says, finally, the correct Fourth Amendment argument. Bob, absolutely right. But let's allow the right-wingers their way. Let the free market take care of it. No search airlines. Would you fly on it? Not me. Let the right-wingers have their no-search airlines. Good way to thin the herd. You listening, Al-Qaeda? Let's let the free market take care of it. But then, you know, when one of no-fly airlines' planes blows up in midair, what'll happen? It'll be 24/7 on Fox. Why did Barack Obama allow that bomb to go off on no-fly airlines, Flight 420? Because he's a fascist Lomunist. That's why, from Kenya. God Almighty, Fox had somebody had a person on the show today on Fox and Friends. They had a birther on. No, they did. They had a birther on. They had John Le Boutillier on. He was hustling a story about CIA operatives traveling the world discovering secrets about Obama. Yeah, it's a fiction novel, but it's, well, let's see. They said of Mr. Le Boutillier, it's fiction, but a lot of the stuff sounds like it really happened. And then the crawl underneath during the appearance says, fact or fiction? Obama identity, a fictional tale of reality. Jesus Christ. And then what happens? Well, guess what? A little something-something was going down at the Supreme Court today. On the docket today, at the Supreme Court of the United States, a case was considered, brought by lawyer Mario Apuzzo on behalf of a guy named Kirchner from Pennsylvania. Kirchner versus Obama. And the argument in that case, Mr. Kirchner via Mr. Abuzzo, was arguing the Vattel theory that says that the writers of the Constitution believed the term natural-born citizen to mean a person born in the United States to parents who were both American citizens. Mario Apuzzo, the lawyer in the case, said, "This case is unprecedented. I believe we presented an ironclad case. We've shown standing. And we've shown the importance of the issue for the Supreme Court. There's nothing standing in their way to grant us a writ of certiorari, except the fact that they refuse to." Boom, boom. Boom. Case closed. Rejected. Refused. The natural-born citizen argument is the work of Aimé de Vattel, a Swiss writer, back in the days of the Founding Fathers. And he says that natural-born means both of your parents were actually citizens. Never mind the fact that that would have prevented Thomas Jefferson from being president. But, you know. Woo! And then finally,
just by way of catching everything up. Willie Nelson has called for the formation of another political group. He has called for the foundation creation of a national teapot party for the outright legalization of cannabis. He said, tax it, regulate it, legalize it, and stop the border wars over drugs. Why should the drug lords make all the money? Thousands of lives will be saved. He said this after he was busted with 6 ounces of weed in Texas this past weekend. You know, it's Willie Nelson. Leave him alone. If pot was the killer everybody says it is, he would have been dead 50 years ago. He was arrested at a U.S. Border Patrol checkpoint in Sierra Blanca, Texas, Friday, November 26th. The officers found 6 ounces of weed on his tour bus. Border guards said they smelled the strong odor of marijuana emanating from the vehicle and ordered a search. He's facing up to 2 years in prison for it. He's 77 years old. Come on. No, I'm not nominating Willie as a moron. I'm nominating the U.S. Border Patrol. Really? Slow work day, fellas? No drug lords or gun runners or aliens or anything? Really? Willie? With the big old bus that says, hi, I'm Willie, I smoke dope? You probably could have just asked him for his autograph. God, the stupid. It hurts. And there's other stuff out there. Rush Limbaugh attacked American Indians as his way of celebrating Thanksgiving. Maybe we can go into that later. And lo and behold, that happened at the same time that a member of Congress was making really stupid arguments about why Thanksgiving existed in the first place. A guy named Aiken. He should probably be our number one nominee. Did you know that the pilgrims came to America because they were fleeing socialism? Yeah, really. I'll dig that one up and try to have the audio for you. Well, at least it ain't going to be no humdrum show. Of course not. It's the horn. And it's Moran Monday. Couple of lines open if you want to get in on the conversation. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let a mill bridge torture me. Whiskey River, don't run dry. I hire all I got to give. Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let a memory torture me. Whiskey River, don't run dry. Whiskey River, bathing my memory, my wetness of the soul. Feeling the amber current flowing from my mind, and warm and empty heart you left so cold. Whiskey River, take my mind. Whiskey River, don't run dry. I hire all I got to care of me. Whiskey River, don't run dry. Whiskey River. Bathing my memory mind in the wetness of its soul. Healing the amber current flowing from my mind. And warm and empty heart left so cold. Whiskey River, take my mind. River, don't run dry. I, you're all I got, take care of me. Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let memories hurt me. Whiskey River, don't run dry. I, you're all I got, take care of me.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
See, that's the thing. If Willie'd been on his bus and he'd had a river of whiskey flowing over his grandmother's paisley shawl, well, he wouldn't have had a problem. Because that's okay. But, good Jesus, the morons, the horror. It's about a minute and a half past the hour. Thanks for putting up with my little hour-long Moran Monday filibuster. We ain't done, but I'm going to go to the phones because I hate keeping people on hold. But I just wanted to get most of that stuff out there so that if you disagreed or anything, you could jump right in and set me straight. Fair enough? Okay. We appreciate your patience. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Oh, my gosh, I missed it. This is a little a tweet from Sarah Palin. She's saying, inexplicable, I recently won in court to stop my book, and she puts it in America by Heart, from being leaked, but the U.S. government can't stop WikiLeaks treasonous act. He is not an American citizen. This woman is so stupid, man. It's incredible.
He is not an American citizen. Was she talking about Obama or Julian Assange?
I'm saying the WikiLeaks, they have no loyalty. Where's the treason at? They don't have no loyalty to America. I mean,
No, but see, and she's dumber than homemade dirt.
My God, but it's just kind of like, and of course she's blaming Obama too. Of course it's his fault. You know what I mean?
Right. Even though it's, you know, people like Hillary getting embarrassed because she's sending out cables telling everybody in the diplomatic corps to spy on everybody else.
Well, no, the whole wiggy, that thing is hilarious because like you said, this country deserves it, and B, the whole foreign service and the foreign policy has been so shielded by this sort of meme that average Americans don't need to know, they don't want to know, you know what I mean?
Right.
So this is fantastic from that perspective, because it's like, listen, if you're going to be having wars all over the show, hello. And to me, another thing that kills me is like this obsession with digital information. Hello, what do you think is going to go on? It is not safe. The information not only is easy to get access to, if you have the know-how, but it also can go away forever. I mean, this is, the whole thing is so hilarious. I was rolling just thinking about how stupid the U.S. looks and how scary they are with their really dark worldview and the constant mentioning of Iran. Like, wow.
Yeah, meanwhile, the one that nobody's really beating on that much, that just really did kind of bother me, was the revelations about the Saudis, Sandra.
Well, no, I was going to jump to that because it also speaks to how venal and disturbing the fascists who are running the Arab state, because if I may use this rather patronizing term, the Arab street, they have a whole different attitude about the politics in that region. When you get to the leadership, they're as you expect. They're disgusting authoritarians who use most of the money from the U.S. to repress their own people, who are in total disagreement with their wants and desires. So to me, it's like, hello, good morning, MFers.
Yeah.
No, I was laughing. I said, yeah, this exposes the leadership for what they are. They're really venal. They're scared of losing their power, and the U.S. is just their protection.
And they are about a million times slicker than we will ever be. I mean, the business that, on the one hand, the WikiLeaks point out that what's the phrase in the New York Times piece? Here it is. Yeah, Saudi donors remain the chief financiers of Sunni militant groups like Al Qaeda.
Mm.
Hello? And yet at the same time, it turns out that they're also the same people that are beating the damn drum 24 hours a day trying to get the United States to attack Iran.
Well, exactly. And it's
Can you say playing both sides against the middle?
No, it's incredible, but it's really not surprising. You know, if you know anything about the client states in the Middle East, they're really disgusting. The leadership is horrific. I mean, how are you going to have a country like Saudi Arabia and the median income is only $12,000? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, and yeah, and it's a slave state.
Yeah, that tells you everything you need to know. I mean, all those countries are just despicable. And another thing that killed me about a couple of articles I read about it is it confirms everything I ever thought about the State Department and the foreign policy mode, that they're just slaves to the right-wing dogma. There's no discussion of Israel because they're all scared they're going to lose their positions, you know, access. It's really disturbing because, to me, it's just like sort of a superpower just meandering with no direction, spending money not accounted for, really out of control. It's so disturbing on that level. I'm just like, and I'm not surprised, which is also disturbing to me, because we have so little say in what is going on in our country, foreign policy-wise and domestically. And for more on Monday, I'm sorry, I have to nominate President Not Sure. What the fuck with him putting a freeze on government workers? I mean, are you kidding me with that? Is he just a Republican? Can he just, like, reveal himself? I'm so done.
You mean where the rubber mask comes off and he sticks two peace signs in the air and says, "I'm back"?
No, it's just absurd. I mean, that whole move is completely symbolic, but it's also another, shit on working people again, because there's a study that says that the government workers make on average 22% less than the likewise in the private sector. And what this may also do is drive what little talent they have to the contractors. Why in the hell are you going to get paid this little when you can work for a contractor doing the same thing and charge the government four times as much?
And the but you know, that trope has been spread thicker than icing on birthday cake, Sandra. That, you know, these government unions are out there; they're the ones destroying America, and that's where the deficit comes from.
Well, that's probably what that TSA business is more towards too. They just want to. It's funny how the TSA people are trying to unionize. All of a sudden, the next thing you know, oh, this TSA shit comes out.
Okay, so you're not. I'm not the only one that smells that rat.
Well, I mean, I think that I also have another thought about it. I'm like, you know, as somebody of color, it's like, welcome to our world, you dumbass whitey. Sorry. It's like when white people start getting handled, all of a sudden it's a big crisis. There's that meme, but more importantly, we don't want any more unionization and let's privatize the security. And that means I'll never fly in this country again, Bob. I don't know about you.
Well, the problem with it is that there are some instances in which one cannot avoid flying.
No, I know, but it's just like, trust me, I'm really sort of fish-eyeing it, because if they have each airline with their own security, like Blackwater, I mean, you know, who's accountable when something blows up in the sky?
Right. And see, again, I go back to something that began with an email that we got from Joe Ray, the Foxhole Atheist, last week, where he was talking about the fact that these indignities, these humiliations, etc., have been going on at gunpoint in Iraq, you know, for 6 years, and nobody ought, you know, none of these right wingers who are hooting and hollering about it now, because it's happening to them, had any problem with it being done to an Iraqi woman or an Iraqi child or an Iraqi grandfather.
Well, how about down the street in my own fucking neighborhood? I'm sorry. I need to go there, because it's like, this is the way the police have dealt with communities of color since day one. So I find it interesting that, you know, everyone's all outraged now because it's a more...
Yeah, because it's their white ox getting gored.
Yeah, but it is really suspicious, and I don't, you know, it's just kind of...
You know, I was surprised. I don't know if you saw anything about this, but The Nation had an article over the weekend that basically questioned the validity of the TSA outrage. And it was received just hatefully by the so-called left. And even Jeremy Scahill, for whom I have considerable respect, tweeted, "The Nation, the magazine for whom I write, has perpetrated a smear on what's his name, Tyner, out in set." A smear? Really? For asking questions? But people are saying, "Well, you know, this is the set, you know, talking about Tyner is like that is the same thing as when Michelle Malkin stalked that poor 12-year-old child."
Yeah, no, I noticed that, you know, Greenwald and all these other people were having a tizzy about what Mark Ames and whoever that woman was wrote, and it's just sort of like, I understand whatever points they're making, but in the meanwhile, there's bigger issues here, like, well, what's really going on? Because I also read that, you know how they had this sort of fake protest, you're supposed to opt out? Well, I heard that they just turned off a lot of them machines.
Yeah, that's what...
They kept it moving. And I thought, don't mess. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't mess. And, you know, these dumbass people thinking, I don't know what, and it's like sort of the cat's out the bag or Pandora's box open. You know, you guys let yourself be stripped of various rights since 9/11. Now all of a sudden you want them back?
Yeah, it's a little hard to get that horse back into the barn when it's that far gone, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't mean to be, you know, just cynical about it, but I just sort of am, like, looking at it and thinking, you know, when Republicans are up in arms about civil liberties, I'm sorry, I can't help but question it.
Well, and in fact, what's this clown's name? Raihan Salam is a with the National Review, I guess you could, well, yeah, he's a person of color, and he says that the TSA outrage by the right wing, well, that's a what he's terming it, a revival of civil liberties talk on the right. Revival? No, you know, and he went on Chris Matthews to say this, and how do you listen to a right winger say something like that and keep a straight face?
Oh, I think, and once again, I just think it's more about the clientele that's being hassled, combined with, the unionization threat, and on and on and on. I just think that it's completely blown out of proportion. Unlike the idea that the FBI can entrap people nonstop and it's never questioned, like that kid. And I'm sorry to go there, but the one in Portland, I'm like,
yeah.
Hello. The man, the father called you 2 years ago to say, please help me, my son's out of control, and all the FBI could do was entrap this kid? You know what, I'm just like, wow, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, right, because the FBI, well, he was a very serious threat, but the threat is ended, citizen.
Yeah, they defused their own bomb. It's all, as soon as I heard it was this one kid, plus I'm waiting for the other group, I'm waiting for his comrades, I'm waiting. Oh, it was just him and the FBI? You know what I'm saying?
Did they get him some new tennis shoes?
No, it was just craziness, and it's really sad because when
the sickest thing inside that, I read the New York Times account as soon as it hit, what, a couple of mornings ago?
Yeah.
And I'm reading down through it, and you know, there's that sort of elite snobbery that's inherent in some New York Times reporting. And it's all breathless about how the FBI, blah, 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 caught it, wanted to be a terrorist, yada, yada. And he wanted to make sure that he blew up women and children, you know. But in the middle of it all, Sandra, there's this one little sentence that said, oh, by the way, his mosque was burned this morning.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. And it's sort of, I don't know, it's just really disturbing when it's just one case after another where you find out that it's the FBI and one, you know, uninformed person or a group of homeless people or some other madness. It's incredible. And the worst thing is how the press, they don't ever question this stuff anymore. Not even a peep.
And not even a mention of the fact that, you know, because when you read the New York Times story, you could just as easily infer that maybe the kid went and set fire to his mosque before he went. No, some goddamn right-winger burned down his mosque when the story broke.
Right, and it's just kind of, I get the impression between the TSA business and you have the, you know, the sort of never-ending ginning up of the terror among us, that all these interests are competing against each other, you know? And after reading the WikiLeaks, I sort of get the impression that does anyone know what's going on, really? I mean, do any of these people who are in charge know what the hell is going on? Because I think that is just bucked out of control. And if I may drift right quickly to Europe, have you seen what's going on there?
Not a happy place.
Listen, it's out of control. Now they're talking about Spain. Wake up, folks. Spain is the ninth, let me repeat that, the ninth largest economy in the fucking world. So if that falls, there ain't enough money in the world to bail that out.
That's the truth.
Okay, so now Germany, what they going to do? Bail all them countries out? And for Ireland, they need to step away, adopt the Argentina model, and screw the IMF. I've never seen terms so outrageous as what they think the Irish put upon people are supposed to do. You kidding me?
Right, and as usual, it's the people who are being asked. You know, the belt always gets tightened around the waist of the poor.
No, but the people are going to throw that. I'll just make a prediction. I think the government's going to fall there, and the new government that comes in is going to say thank you, but no thanks, because they're not going to pay 6.7% interest, which is what they're demanding on this loan. If you can imagine that.
Six. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, so it's really up.
On how many billions of euros?
It's like 90 billion or something real crazy, but the idea, though, is that if you look at Iceland let them motherfuckers fail. You see the difference? They let the banks fail, so they were able to kind of separate. I'm not saying they're not in trouble, but they let the banks work it out with the other creditors.
Well, and lo and behold, the Iceland business sort of, I guess you could argue that it inspired a little bit of civic involvement, because Iceland is now in the process of drafting a new constitution.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, but Ireland decided that they would take all the debt of these failed banks, onto their balance sheet. Because did you realize that before that happened, their public debt was fine? Now it's not, because they took on the bank's bad loans, and now they're required to pay that back with blood, I guess. And, Belgium is in trouble. It's interesting.
Yep. And of course, there's the WikiLeaks angle on Belgium, too, where the Obama administration was trying to get them to take some detainees, and they said to Belgium, hey, listen, it would be a great way to enhance your standing in Europe.
Well, they also promised a presidential visit to Slovenia if they would do something, too. I mean, the whole thing is just, that's what you get when you start two wars. I have to agree with you on that one. That was a perfect observation about the whole mess. And now the right wing, they want to what? Make them enemy combatant?
It's
a joke.
Yeah, let's go torture Julian Assange a little bit. But the thing is, you and I say something like that, and we've got our tongue firmly implanted in our cheeks. You know what? The Darth Cheney's daughter ain't kidding when she says that.
It's very interesting, and I keep going back to the total reliance on this sort of new information wide world. Please, there's a lot of pitfalls with it, mainly that digital communications are at risk. Encryption my ass, you know what I'm saying? Anyway.
Well, there's never been a lock made that an enterprising burglar couldn't pick.
Oh, listen, did you get a chance to look at that movie I sent you?
I haven't yet. It's on the list for tonight.
Oh, yeah, you definitely should check it out, because it's definitely sort of beyond interesting how the unions back then knew exactly what time it was. Wow. Anyway, I'll let you go, but listen, you should read that Dave Zirin's article, because he's talking about how the NCAA should just close down Notre Dame's football totally. Because you've heard what's going on, right?
Yeah, it's...
This poor girl who killed herself.
Yeah, and no charges against the... No.
Right, and so he wrote that they really should just sort of... put an end to that program for a couple of years.
Just SMU them for a little bit.
And did you know that thing fell over, the 50-foot tower that killed that kid, that they still kept practicing for 25 minutes?
Jeez, no.
Yeah, so it's, hello. Anyway, I'm sure you got other people, so I'll let you go.
Sandra, have a great night.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Calling from California, that's our buddy Sandra, and we march onward, I think. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? I think.
Hello.
Oh, there you are.
Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Sneaking up on me, are you, Susan?
I had to hit my mute button. I have a Moran nominee.
Okie doke.
I sent you the link for this. Last week, I don't know if everybody knows it, but the Pacific Northwest had a severe cold snap. It got down to, at one point, 19 degrees.
That's brutal for y'all.
Oh, yeah. It got real nippy. And this woman was driving in a town called, not far away, in fact, it's a town where one of our news agents lives in, called Hillsboro.
Hillsboro, right.
She was driving, Yeah, she was driving in there. And all of a sudden, this kid basically stepped more or less out in front of her car, and she freaked, stopped the car. What really freaked her out is because here's the temperatures hovering close to 19 degrees, and he's wearing his underwear, and that's it. And he's soaking wet.
Soaking wet, out, in the freezing cold, in nothing but his underwear.
Yeah, turns out, dear old daddy didn't like his grades. Apparently this kid was, I'm pretty sure he's a middle schooler. Apparently he didn't like his grades. So as a form of punishment, he made him strip down, doused him with water, and then locked him out of the house. In 19-degree weather.
You know, I read that when you sent it to me, and I searched my mind, because I'm a dad.
I couldn't believe
it. How would you, why would, what would go through your, at what point does something in your head click and go, I know how I can make him work harder at school. I'll get him a good case of pneumonia.
Well, no, I was thinking here, she
hypothermia, maybe.
Yeah. Give him frostbite, you know, real nice case. But anyway, the lady was intelligent. She bundled him up in the car, got him, took him home, started feeding him warm drinks and such, and called the police. And they went over and arrested the father. Charges are pending. The kid is in foster care. I gather the mother's either dead or not in the picture.
Yeah, out of the picture without a doubt.
Yeah. I am profoundly ashamed that this guy's from this state.
Well, David in Tennessee, who knows his way around your neck of the woods, too, says Oregon Child Protective Services will not let that slide, and Dad's going to end up in jail.
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, that is assuming he lives through the process, because the citizens of this area are rather, shall we say, rough, to put it mildly. That was my morning.
But wouldn't you like to? But wouldn't you like to have a little bit of investigation on Daddy? Wouldn't you like to know? Let's say, for instance, where he gets his news. Because I'm guessing Dad's not a liberal.
Actually, I've got three brothers, all of which are built like Godzilla, and I'd like to have my three brothers have a talk with this dude out in a dark alley someplace.
But you know, I mean, I think you know where I'm coming from, Susan. I'm fascinated with the mental process by which someone reaches the decision that risking the life of one's son is a good idea, or a good manifestation of being an engaged and caring parent. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you see, when I read the story, I thought immediately about people like that hateful old fraud in Colorado Springs, Dr. James Dobson, who said that fathers should take naked showers with their young sons to keep them from catching the gay. Or also said that a child should be beaten until they cry real tears. Cry real tears being a quote. And you see, there are elements in our society that encourage parents to do this kind of hateful, filthy, repulsive things to their child.
No.
And they are without fail on the right wing.
Yeah,
and they are almost without fail Christians.
Yeah, they're Bible thumpers.
Let me share some quotes with you, Susan. These all come from the Family Research Council.
Mm-hmm.
one of the primary goals of the homosexual rights movement is to abolish all age of consent laws and to eventually recognize pedophiles as the prophets of a new sexual order.
Yeah, I've heard them touting that so-called study of theirs.
Yeah.
That's a piece of crock if I ever heard it. I have gay relatives. They're gay. They're not pedophiles.
Most pedophiles aren't gay.
Yeah, I know. Pedophiles are straight.
Gay, according to the Family Research Council, gay Christians are the same as Satan worshipers. Family Research Council says gays spit on Jesus.
Oh, good God.
Homosexual activists who once asked for tolerance now show no tolerance or sympathy for Christians whose sacred symbols they defile. They are totalitarians who accuse everyone that disagrees with them of hatred. Even as they masquerade under the banner of tolerance, they spit on the most sacred person revered and worshipped by millions. They mock our religious symbols, deride our beliefs, and even desecrate our churches and sacraments.
Horseshit.
Yeah.
Pardon my language.
But do you see, and I remember Susan, back years ago when, our proactive attorney general tried to get a handle on, anti-gay and just hateful bullying in our schools. Who was there front and center demanding that the program be stopped? Why, the people, yeah. the followers of the Prince of Peace.
Right.
Well, the West Virginia Family Association.
Right. The bit about the Satanists. Okay. I've met a few Satanists. They're not exactly what I call nice people, but they're not pedophiles either.
No, the pedophiles are in the churches.
Yeah!
Physician, heal thyself. Isn't that in their book?
More or less, yeah. Yeah, it just appalls me.
Well, I really wish someone out in real journalism land, preferably somewhere near Oregon, would do a little investigating about Daddy out there. Kate offering another take on it. She says, the father could be a very, very ill returning vet who has completely lost it. I'd like to have, says Kate, more background about the family. They all need help.
Yeah, definitely, the whole family needs help. But dear old Daddy, he needs jail. That's flat abuse. He could have killed that kid.
Well, hopefully things will turn out okay for the boy, and he will never have to go back to that home.
Yeah.
How old was the boy?
I'm pretty sure he was more or less in middle school.
Jesus.
Yeah, which isn't that old. Certainly not old enough to be having to walk around. It was in the evening, too, which meant the temperature was dropping real fast. It was really cold. I was sitting here in my house just freezing my tush. And I had a furnace running. It was 19 degrees outside at one point. It was cold. We were being warned, leave your faucets running. That kind of cold.
Yeah, he was 11 years old.
Yeah. Just, no! Anyway, two other goodies, real fast. The medicine for Alex Jones is called a prefrontal lobotomy. That'll take care of him, realize. And the other thing, the guy that he, you mentioned he wanted to pass this law, with that they had to be citizens who are children of citizens. Do you know who that would have outlawed?
Who?
John McCain. John McCain was born in the U.S. Canal Zone. Before the law.
Actually, he was not born in the canal zone. He was born in Panama, The hospital he was born in was not in the canal zone.
Yeah, he was born in Panama, but he was born, you know, in the as part of a military family, and the law that grandfathered him in as a citizen was not passed until after he was born. So, technically, if you want to get really picky about it, which I never really did, I never thought it was any big deal, he wasn't really eligible.
Oh, and by the way, to back up on you just a little bit, the young man who was forced outside had bruises on his back, old bruises consistent with previous injuries.
I'm not surprised, something like that.
And dad is 49 years old. David Andrew Cecil is his name.
In other words, old enough to damn well know better. And it doesn't sound like he's 49 years old. Doesn't sound like he's returning military either, or they would have mentioned it.
You would think
it just smelled.
Well, frankly, and I realize I'm speculating, and I understand the problems that are attendant upon it, Susan. But frankly, this sounds like some good. This sounds like some good, upstanding Christian tough love parenting.
Yeah, or a good Glenn Beck parenting, you know.
Yeah.
No, not Glenn Beck. Drudge. Remember those tirades that Drudge used to go into about kids?
No.
Oh, God, he used to do some horrendous tirades about going home and telling your kid, jumping all over your kid. And I'm going to have to dig them up for you. But they were just horrendous. Because, you know, and they were the type of thing where you think, oh my God, can you imagine a kid coming home and hearing that? You know, it was the type of thing, the anti-gay type thing. What to do if your kid is gay, that type of thing.
Right.
Creepy. Creepy, creepy people. These people are strange.
Dangerous, too.
Yeah. Oh, may I offer an opinion about the TSA thing?
Sure.
Okay. I realize there is no Fourth Amendment thing about the pat-downs and so on. However, it offends my sense of dignity. Therefore, I refuse to fly.
A lot of people are taking that approach.
I figure if enough people refuse to get on those airplanes, sooner or later, the CEOs of those airlines are going to wake up and realize, hey, wait a minute, we're losing a bundle, and they're going to go trot-trotting off to Washington and start screaming to their tame congressmen. And then all of a sudden, those pat-downs and all those things like that are going to disappear.
That's possible, but, you know, the thing that I don't... The majority of people on airlines, I suspect, are people who have to be on an airplane, not people who are traveling for pleasure or elective purposes, and they would have to be the ones who quit flying, I think, in order for something like that to be really, really effective. And I don't know how they do that and still keep a job.
Yeah, the dumbest thing I thought was they were searching and patting down the pilots.
Well, and the stewardesses, too. You know, the story of the woman who had to show them her breast prosthesis, she was a flight attendant.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, the pilots, if they wanted to do something drastic, all they'd have to do is wait to get behind the controls of the plane and then do their thing. Guys, use your heads. You know, they don't need a bomb. They just get behind the controls. And
but I find it so interesting that right-wingers are out front with all of this when they didn't care a damn about their dignity for 8 years of George Bush. And he was keeping us safe from the terrorists. Remember?
Never mind the fact that he didn't. Yeah, never mind the fact that, of course, he didn't.
There you go.
It, you know, we need to keep bringing that up. He didn't keep us safe. Horse pucky, there was no safety. And there never will be any safety. If you expect safety, go lock yourself up in a bunker and never come out again. You're never going to be safe. Don't expect it.
There you go. You know, David in Tennessee pointing out, Susan, he says, wait and watch. Out in Oregon, that dad is listening to Lars Larson, no doubt.
Oh, God, yes. Dear old Lars with his gun shoved down in his pants. I sincerely hope one of these days he'll put it down in his pants and the damn thing will go off and blow his nuts off.
You're cranky tonight, Susan. Well, you have yourself a wonderful evening, dear. We will talk soon.
Is Margie doing better?
You know, I'd like to say yeah, but no.
Oh.
I mean, you know, it's mono, and she's miserable. Everything hurts.
Yeah, I know. My son had mono, and it's miserable. It sucks.
And, you know, it's months of it she's dealing. Eesh.
Yeah.
So, you know, Agnes just tries to keep her comfortable and you know, keep her from being... But every now and then the pain comes along and, you know, it's bad enough to make her cry.
Yeah. And she's got to stay down.
And, you know, you talk to the doctor and you say, is there anything we can do for it? And he goes, no, deal with it.
Yeah.
Modern medicine.
Sympathy.
Yeah. Sympathy and soup. Susan, have a great evening, dear.
My love.
All right, will do.
Give
take
my
care.
My love.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
And onward we go. It's about 20 minutes before the hour. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Fancy.
Hey, sweetie. On Susan's comment, I had a neighbor who did that once. He put a pistol in his belt or in his pants and shot his foot. And he was telling me about it later. He says, they never tell you in the movies, damn, that hurts. And, you know, it made a strong impression on him about safety, gun safety. Now, a few thoughts here. I think we're going to go backwards with the kid that was abused. And I used to work in a situation with I had kids with basically a bunch of really wealthy kids, or well-off kids, and often with mom and dad who both had careers. And I always called these the neglected children of the affluent because there were very high performance standards put on these kids. But there was nobody to sit at the kitchen table and go over the math homework with them. And some of them lucked out with really good housekeepers. You know, I knew housekeepers who could do the kids' bar and bat mitzvah set up by heart after carrying them to all the rehearsals. But there is if there's nothing wrong with putting a fairly high performance expectation on children if you make every effort to help them achieve that.
Right, to back it up.
And to sit at the kitchen table at night and go over the math homework and do a little reading out loud and find out what the capital of Paraguay is probably not a bad thing for a parent to do.
Montevideo?
I think so. I can't tell you.
You can't do that to me.
No. The average weight of a worker bee. Okay.
Airspeed velocity of an unladen sparrow.
But you know, if you, my late companion used to have this theory about violence, and he says if hitting your kid makes them a better kid, then probably breaking their arm will make them even better.
Nobel Prize.
You know, just up the violence a bit. On the other hand, you know, well, here's where I'm getting back to the airport. I think the whole airport craziness is prophylactic. It's we're just going to make it so crazy that nobody's going to carry anything. You know, because you know, a determined terrorist can certainly do enough damage on city transit system, the bus, a number of other things. My neighbor's bringing the mail back. Thank you. Okay. I think it's a lot of show going on. But the one thing I find very, very disturbing, and this is where my mommy comes in. I'm a mommy person. And you tell your kids, nobody touches you inappropriately. And if they do, you pitch a fit. I saw a clip. I know there's one of a little boy and the dad took his shirt off, but I think I saw one of a little girl. And this kid was pitching a fit. It was no. You know, stamping her feet, and I'm going, you go, girl. She was doing just exactly what she should have been doing.
Yeah, she was doing what she'd been taught.
Sure, a stranger's touching her. And that, to me, is very, very disturbing, the pat-down of children. You know, I mean, we it's very clear in my house, if Uncle So-and-so wants to pat you on the popo, let him know that Mommy will break every one of his fingers. We don't do that. No. And I'm very disturbed at the whole thought of good little children should stand there and get a pat down. It's wrong. You can hear I am disturbed.
But the pat down generally only comes if you fail or opt out of the scanner. So.
Or I don't want my kids going through the scanner. Or, you know, my kids wearing, I don't know, something that sets off. You know, a lot of places don't have the scanners yet, but they have the beeper when they're.
God, can you imagine what this would have been like in the era before disposable diapers? You know, pins on planes?
I got a kid who came in from Europe wearing a piercing in an intimate situation. And, set everything off in Amsterdam. Pretty much got him into strip position. So, yeah, I mean, but it just seems like an awful lot of theater. For if I were a determined terrorist, I certainly could take out, you know, the central bus terminal and do a significant damage or BART or, you know, public transit. I could take out the just a lot of things. So I think just way, way, way too much theater going on there.
Well, Kate noting that the father who took his son's shirt off took the son's shirt off so he wouldn't have to go through the scanner, apparently.
Yeah, I guess.
And that was, yeah. These stories are proliferating like mushrooms after a rain, and, you know, maybe it is because people feel like their dignity is being assaulted. But any time that I catch the for-profit media jumping on something and running with it, well, we know who drives for the most part, drives the for-profit media, don't we?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, my neighbor said, you know, what would you do if they badged you down? I'd say a little lower and a little faster, please. You know, I'm kind of.
Yeah, there's the old joke about the.
About all this.
Yeah, the nun going through the park and she gets mugged, and the guy says, "All right," says, "give me all your money." She She says, you know, I'm a nun. I don't have any money. He says, I don't believe you. And he pats her down. And she says, really, I don't have any money, but if you do that again, I'll write you a check.
I hadn't heard that.
I probably shouldn't. Yeah, that was probably awful, but you know, you collect these things over the years and you have to air them out once in a while. Yeah, David in Tennessee noting that the piercings crowd is really in for it with this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I had a kid with a PA that it turned out to be an international problem in flight, but... Karl Rove's father apparently
Karl Rove's was it his father or his stepfather? I don't remember which.
No, his natural father.
Yeah, and, it was a real Kinkenstein.
And Peter had the URL for the pictures.
Yes, I remember.
It was very impressive. Ew, people do that voluntarily? That just most odd. I can kind of understand where this man maybe warped a bit. I think I've said enough. Love and kisses there.
Oh, rats! The capital of Paraguay is Asuncion.
Asuncion. It is. Where's Montevideo?
Uruguay.
I think you're right.
So, I've been caught. But, you know, the nice thing about that kind of ignorance on my part is that it's curable. And I want it cured. Thank you, Marty. Jeez.
Okay, love and kisses, Dave.
All right, you take care, Fancy.
Holiday happiness, and I'm out of here.
All right, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. That's Fancy calling from somewhere... an undisclosed location somewhere in Arizona. Hey, welcome to the program.
And now it is time for a Moran Monday to make you hit your head on the desk and impact it heavily.
There will be bruising?
Oh, there will be bruising, Bob, because this needs to be said. You know how everyone talks about how the Obama administration is going to get green if we push him. Well, people... the verdict is coming in, and here's what's found at the Public Integrity site. In the name of job creation and clean energy, the Obama administration has doled out billions of dollars in stimulus money to some of the nation's biggest polluters. The administration has awarded more than 179,000 categorical exclusions to stimulus projects funded by federal agencies, freeing those projects from review under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. Coal-burning utilities like Westar Energy and Duke Energy chemical manufacturer DuPont and ethanol maker Diadon Milling are among the firms with histories of serious environmental violations that have won blanket NEPA exemptions. Even a project at BP's Malin Refinery in Texas City, owner of the oil industry's worst safety record and site of a deadly 2005 explosion as well as a benzene leak, secured a waiver for the preliminary phase of a carbon capture and sequestration experiment involving two companies with past compliance problems. Agency officials who granted the exemptions told the center that they do not have time, in most cases, to review the environmental compliance records of stimulus recipients and do not believe past violations should affect polluters' chances of winning stimulus money or the NEPA exclusions. Some polluters report their stimulus project might cause unknown, but anyways, it goes on from there. And
where is this?
It's at the publicintegrity.org site.
Okay.
And there's just one of the quotes from a national resource defense lawyer says, why bring somebody who is a known bad actor and give them government money and a categorical exclusion for their project? You see, people, this is what's happening. All of the promises that were made, it was all political theater. It's going to get worse. They're going to get more exclusions. And the stimulus money, and they're going to get away with even more than they could possibly have dreamed, and they're going to complain about it. There is no 11-dimensional chess. There is none, okay? This is the time to do something. And that's why I nominate the whole Obama administration for Moran Monday. The whole administration for letting this go by.
Well, you mentioned carbon capture and storage or sequestration or whatever. You know, I go a little bit insane every time I hear that word.
I can imagine.
Because it's a great big dangerous boondoggle. I was wandering around the interweb tube somewhere, and I saw where some cat said, CO2 is not toxic. It's just a gas. And, you know, I felt my head begin to swell up like it was going to explode. CO2's not toxic? Let's fill a room with CO2 and you walk in and tell me if it's toxic or not. Because you're not walking out.
Yeah, and the defense, of course, is that it frees up more stimulus for clean energy projects. But to me, when you allow these kind of big polluters and you free them with these kind of environmental oversight, you're not going to get what you want, people. You're going to get pollution that you've never dreamed of, and you're not going to be able to clean it up with your green energy projects, because the accumulation of it is going to completely cloud over the entire United States and abroad. You see, Bob, this is what makes me sick. This is what makes me sick, is the fact that people still don't understand that when you do these sort of things and you make these sorts of compromises, you're asking for it. You are literally asking for and you can't just say, well, we're gonna wait 20 years from now and it will be much better. No, that's not how it works. The time to do it is now. We don't have 20 years.
Indeed.
And you know, the thing to me about the whole, again, when you look at something like the WikiLeaks story and the outrage of this and the way it's framed and the way the media puts it and says that the WikiLeaks are terrorists and they need to be handled and so forth, and now you have right-wing radio just basically going outright asking for assassination on Julian Assange. I think it says a lot when we look at all of the corruption and we have to point to a foreigner, a shadowy foreigner that looks like a James Bond villain, that's the bad guy, that's the culprit in our country. That's it. That's the guy we need to go after. It's Julian Assange. He's the problem.
You're right. Yeah.
And
isn't that the typical response of a bad actor caught with hand in cookie jar?
And you know, that's the problem. I don't think the left understands, and a lot of liberals don't understand, is the fact that when we try to put these complex, we need to learn how to frame these stories more simpler. And I don't know how we're going to do that with our current culture in this country of soundbite nation, the hyper soundbite nation that we live in. It's like a bad loop, a feedback loop that you have to compete with to get a story out. Say, well, what's the one sentence that we need to know about to get a story out? And you can't do it in a sentence. And that's the problem. That's what we're competing with. And that's why when I see stories, people listen. When you see stories like WikiLeaks, you should look at it and you should say, you know what? Most of America is not going to, this is going to pass over most of America. But the one thing that's going to stay with them, people, the one thing that's going to stay with them is the James Bond-like villain. That's why the economy's so bad, and that's why we can't get those terrorists. God damn it. And that's really what it comes down to, Bob, just making the people, just dialing up the anger, dialing up the anger in America. That's all this is about. Let's dial it up some more and see their reaction. We're like, you know what we're in like, Bob? We're like in one of a bio Frank Luntz machine for the United States.
Well, you know what I was just thinking about, David, and I know this might resonate a little bit with you because I remember when we talked about him some in the past. You remember Philip K. Dick?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you remember the book A Scanner Darkly?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was made into a film that I watched based on your recommendation. Good movie. The animation was a little bit tough to watch, but anyway, in the book, it's a future in which, of course, Philip K. Dick, it's a dystopian future in which the drug problem of America is no longer, you know, cannabis or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They are designer drugs, designer mm-hmm. chemicals, that you take the pill and you feel emotions.
Right.
And one of the drugs that really, you know, is creating a problem is anger. And right. people are just taking pills because it just because they like that sense of being angry.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't what you just described that, in a way, absent the pill? Jesus Christ, I've got a story here, and you just sort of opened the door on it for me. I got a little audio. Oh, Jesus, I can't do 20 minutes. No. Just to finish. You know that Barack Obama delivered a Thanksgiving address.
Yeah.
And in his Thanksgiving address, he said he praised the American Indians for their role in saving the early Massachusetts-based settlers. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because Barack Obama said it, it has to be attacked. Because Barack Obama can't do anything that the right wing doesn't just have to find a reason to hate.
Mm.
He said, he attacked the American Indians.
Uh-huh.
He said, where is it here? Every cliche, here it is. Every cliche that is wrong about Thanksgiving shows up in his proclamation. The pilgrims show up at Plymouth. The Indians had been there for thousands of years. We get off the boats. We don't know how to feed ourselves. The Indians show us how. They shared their skill in agriculture, which helped the early colonists survive, and whose rich culture continues to add to our nation's heritage. Is it possible he believes it? I don't doubt that he believes it. And even if he doesn't believe it, he wants everybody else to believe it. This is what all those drugs, we were talking about drugs a minute ago, this is what drugs do to your brain when you're a junkie. I don't doubt that he believes it. And even Obama believes that this nation is fatally flawed since its founding, even before its founding. So it stands to reason, you know, a lot of people did not hear the true story of Thanksgiving until I wrote it in my book in the early 90s. I can remember Snerdly and HR were stunned when they heard the first story of Thanksgiving, the real story, because we'd all been taught a variation of the Indian Save Us. We had to draw pictures of it in school. That's exactly right. Art projects of the Indians saving us. But no. No. It turns out that according to Flush Limbaugh, it was a matter of simple economics. And he later said, no. He said that Thanksgiving is about the Indians saving us. The true story of Thanksgiving is how socialism failed. Really, David?
Mm.
The true story of Thanksgiving is how socialism failed. Of course we showed them gratitude. We shared our bounty with them. Not because we didn't know how to make it. It's because we first failed as socialists. Only when we turned capitalists did we have plenty. The Indians didn't teach us capitalism.
You can never have that discussion of socialism for the wealthy. They will shut it down in less than 2 seconds. They don't want to admit it's so clear as day now, Bob, that they want to live in the most hypocritical...
No, you can't have the conversation with them because they are the direct and major beneficiaries of socialism. And they don't want to they don't want to be compelled to acknowledge it, because if they did, if the rest of America found out that the top 1% of this country are actually welfare queens, so to speak,
yeah.
Well, then the rest of us might feel like maybe we deserved a little bit too.
We don't have time for these clowns. And you know, the fact that we have a media that entertains them at every whim is a concerning thought.
And I really have, I don't think anyone has any idea of how to properly deal with this without having some kind of, I don't know. There's gonna need to be put a handle on it somehow. Maybe some, feedback machines where you just shoot it at the stations and there's this feedback disruption loop so they can't hear anything and they can't get the signal out. I don't know. But something has to happen because of, like I said, I mean, I bring this point and I'll say this one last thing and then that'll be it. But I just want to bring this point so people understand how crazy the wealthy are. My dad knows a multimillionaire and he goes hunting with him and he owns a dealership in Texas. Now, Bob, every time he goes over here, he spends $50,000 on his plane trips. And you know what he does, people? Do you know what he does with that $50,000? He writes it off as a business expense. $50,000. And he laughs about it.
Well, wouldn't you?
I know, but the point is that this is a guy who constantly listens to Rush. He's constantly intoxicated, and he constantly tries to tell my parents every time when they go out to dinner and stuff, and he's buying everything. And any time he makes a point, he's like, yeah, but you know, you just gotta, he goes, it's really about what you have to do for yourself and da 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 and all of this. And I mean, and it's just basically one big joke to him. So my point is, this is how the Obama administration is treating individuals like this, and they understand it. They understand that it's just one giant puppet show. And they don't even follow their damn rules. Have a nice night, everyone.
Take care, David.
Later.
Bye now. Hard to avoid. I mean, sometimes reality just gets in your face. And you look away, and it's like it's one of those three-way mirrors in a department store. It's there on the left, it's there on the right. But, you know, we are a relatively small little cadre of friends and personally adopted family amongst ourselves. And we recognize, we know that the people who, you know, the top 1% of this country controls 35% of the wealth. Is that the number? Well, they didn't get there by hard work and bootstrapping and having a rising tide lift all their boats. They got there because they get preferential treatment from the government. There are programs that make sure that they have their wealth. God, the biggest welfare program in the United States is the Pentagon. They've got their front and back feet in the trough. They know they're supping high on the public teat. But they can't acknowledge it. Because to acknowledge it might trigger a desire in the rest of us for some of it. And they want it. What is it? Come on. They want it all. Right?
John passing along something from the chat room to me. He said, Tobias said in chat, no, it's not 11-dimensional chess anymore. It's more like rearrange the stickers on your CNC. Oh, there's sometimes things like that happen, and I have to just pull the down while I snort. Because unlike Rush Limbaugh, who clears his throat and plays with loogies and hacks and snorts and sneezes, and I try not to subject you to that. Rearrange the stickers on your CNC. That's a keeper for the ages. Hey, welcome to the program.
You got it.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
All I can say is the axiom for this country is where ignorance is bliss, there's folly to be wise. And that's exactly the way these people operate. And if I were David, I think I would suggest to his father that he find a new hunting companion.
Those kind of folks will shoot you in the face.
Here's the thing, Bob. Number one, did you not say that Obama had issued a federal hiring freeze?
Yes, or wage freeze.
Wage freeze and not hiring, right?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, normally a lot of presidents, when they come into office, the first thing they do is to try to think they can balance the budget of this country on the backs of the federal worker. And if you go back to Homeland Security, under which TSA is located, they don't have any Title V rights guaranteed federal employees, okay?
Yeah, like civil service kind of.
Exactly. And when you have civil service employees being reduced and being replaced by contract employees, they are paid less than probably half or three-fifths of what a civil service employee would normally be paid. Nor do they have to go through the screening process, the vetting process, of which most civil servants go through, or at least the ones that I had to go through. And here you have a complete lack of ability of these people to do their jobs. They have no interest in doing their jobs properly, and they take excesses. And because they're not responsible to anybody except some contractor who is costing the federal government three to four times what it would pay to create what we call a full-time equivalent position in the civil service.
Well, I remember when there was a huge fight in Congress back during the nightmare years of the Bush administration, shortly after September the 11th, 2001, about whether or not these screeners would be unionized federal employees.
They are what is called a non-union thing. Or, I tell you the truth, I forget the term. You have union and non-union. But there's another term for it, and I can't remember it. It's just right on the tip of the tongue phenomenon. But nonetheless, what we have is a degrading of the workforce that is designed to make this country function and go. And, you know, protect its citizens properly.
And so, if I understand and am correctly extending your argument, Jim, people who have no workplace dignity are less likely to be concerned about someone else's. Is that a fair expression?
Of course it is. There you go. I mean, you know, good Lord, a lot of people complain about civil service and not being able to become a member of the civil service. I can remember 20 years ago because of the vetting process, the forms that you had to fill out, the 0171 form that's now been replaced by another form that the Clinton administration brought in with their reinventing government, which is basically nothing but a glorified resume. And I can remember the hoops and the loops and the stuff that you had to go follow in order to become within what they call the rule of three. In other words, the reach of three possible candidates based upon meritocracy. In other words, what I'm saying is the federal bureaucracy has been replaced from meritocracy to mediocrity. And if that's not one hit out of the park, I don't know what is.
That's a score.
You goddamn right it is. And this is the reason they're trying to completely destroy any type of government agency and eliminate the possibility of these people to do their jobs properly, and they've got a bunch of people up there who won't be employed by anybody else, and they've got these contractors who are feeding at the trough, and they are costing the American taxpayer so many more times what it would cost to in place and keep in place a reliable, intelligent, capable federal worker who takes pride in his job and who is there to do the public good. And it's pervasive through all the agencies, IRS, FDA, sure that this whole thing basically does not create a very good climate of ability for a guy to do his job properly and to let things slide through. I mean, the purpose of the federal bureaucracy is to protect our water, our right to be able to travel safely, and our abilities to have something in place that will create protection and also to create a sense of security. I mean, that's the big thing these people are talking about, security. Well, they're no more interested in security than I am in underwater basket weaving. What they're interested in is gouging as much money from the American taxpayer as they possibly can and providing the least amount of quality service.
Because otherwise, these procedures would have been put in place with a modicum of forethought. This outrage didn't have to happen. If it's natural, the outrage didn't have to happen, Jim. It could have been avoided. But if it's just ginned up outrage manufactured by the Koch brothers or whomever, they would have been outraged about any of it because of the fact that it's happening. During the Obama administration, witness the fact that they were as quiet as Grant's tomb when all this crap was being put forward under Bush.
Of course, there you go. And here's the thing: the entire mentality of this country, or what is being fostered for the entire mentality and actuality of this country, is what the Nazis used to call coordination. Remember that term they used, coordination, in bringing everybody into line?
Yeah, kind of like behind a cordon.
In making them afraid to be different or express themselves freely and to exercise their rights as citizens? That's exactly what it is. It's a repeat of the old Nazi thing of coordination. It's a long German word, and my German is very poor, and I'm not going to try to insult you with it. But it begins with a G and ends with a G. And you can figure it out from your German-English language dictionary. Well, that's what I see is happening.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about the American people in that fashion, Jim, because on Face the Nation yesterday, Bob Schieffer had a guy on, an author by name Edmund Morris, who wrote the book Colonel Roosevelt.
Right.
And he was asked by Schieffer, "What would Teddy Roosevelt think of today's politics, Edmund?" And Morris answered, "You keep asking these presentist questions, Bob. As the immortal Marissa Tomei said in My Cousin Vinny, that's a bullshit question, because you cannot pluck people out of the past and expect them to comment on what's happening today." And you know, everybody got all upset. You know, "Oh my God," he said, "bullshit on Face the Nation," and they had to bleep it, and you know, because the American people are so tender of ear that they dare not be allowed to hear such vulgar language on the public airwaves from, you know, Bob Schieffer's show. But the kick of it, I'm sorry,
we are not talking about psychoanalyzing dead people, but I do know that Theodore Roosevelt, the one who instituted our program of national parks, protection of animals, protection of water, resources, things of that nature, you don't have to psychoanalyze his departed spirit to realize exactly what he would have done. Do you?
I don't think so. But the thing is, Jim, shortly after that, the earth-shattering use of the BS word on CBS, he offered something that was considerably more trenchant, and it goes to the very heart of what you were just saying about the American people. He said, "I see," and he too was talking about the American people. He said, "I see an insular people who are insensitive to foreign sensibilities, who are lazy, obese, complacent, and increasingly perplexed as to why Americans are losing our place in the world to people who are more dynamic than us and more disciplined.
Bob, we are becoming more insensitive to one another. That's what I said before. Social conscience is becoming sociopathy, not caring, not being able to sustain a decent relationship with another human being. And that is what these people are fostering. The atmosphere of not caring. Who raised me into hell with you? No social conscience, no social responsibility, no compassion. I mean, Susan mentioned this poor kid who was iced down by his father and left out in 22 to 19 degree weather. I mean, what does that tell you? I guess that's the difference between me and them. You know, excuse me if I expound here, as Sophia would say on Golden Girls, okay?
Go right ahead.
And I'm not going to say picture at Sicily. I'm just going to say right here. I remember the last cat I adopted. It took me 6 months to get that cat in. But before I pulled that cat in, I had a condo out there with a heating pad in it. Because he was so wild, I couldn't catch him. I had more compassion for that creature of God than this man obviously did for his own son.
That's the truth.
And people like this Dobson person who's talking about all this craziness with taking showers to prevent homosexuality and the other things that you've mentioned, these are a nation of sociopaths. Back in the 50s, Philip Wiley wrote a book called A Generation of Vipers, and that is exactly what has begun to emerge in this country and is becoming in charge, a nation of vipers. How can we care about people in the rest of the world when we cannot care about and have respect for ourselves and our own interrelationships between our friends and our family members? Much less to mention the son of a man's body.
You know, I think you've expressed it perfectly, Jim. And it kind of goes... you've expressed the things that lie at the heart of the lack of dignity in the TSA thing, as we observed, and you've also I heard stories leading up to the Thanksgiving weekend, Jim. I get a bunch of emails, you know. I get a lot of emails.
Yeah, I send you a bunch too.
And I even respond to some. But the thing is, I was hearing these stories about, you know, Thanksgiving's coming and I'm going to have to sit down and listen to my right-wing relative, blah, blah, blah.
I heard that. Yes, I did.
And it was more than one person. There were a number of people who responded and said, yeah, it's going to happen. You know, I can't, culling them all together, I can't enjoy the holidays because of the hatefulness that's going to be at the table. It's like there's an empty chair at the table for hate. But the thing is, what usually happens if you listen to these stories, Jim, you will find out that without fail, it's not, you know, some flaming liberal running into the room, screaming about the fascists that ruins everybody's Thanksgiving. It's the right winger in the family or right wingers in the family who march in trumpeting the latest godforsaken talking point from Rush Limbaugh or Hannity or Savage or Beck. And right there, Jim, is the source. I maintain this as a firm conviction. Right there is the source of that hatefulness, that spitefulness, that just plain old-fashioned, godforsaken, mean-spiritedness that exists in this country today.
Have you ever seen the film Home for the Holidays with Holly Hunter and...
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Remember the conversation and Charles Durning? Remember the conversation and the Thanksgiving celebration that they had?
Yes.
Does that kind of bring to mind what you're saying?
It is. But, you know, if you can't sit down to Thanksgiving dinner without somebody, pass the cranberry sauce, and he's been gone for a while from office, but, you know, it's Thanksgiving. I'm thinking about what I'm thankful for, and you know what I'm thankful for? I'm thankful Bill Clinton ain't president no more. Did you hear about all them drugs he had smuggled in at the Meaner Airport in Arkansas? That shit goes on in this country, Jim. And it's toxic and it's poisonous. And it's also, and you know, let me make this crystal clear. It is also deliberate. Because the right wing in this country, if you don't accede, if you don't knuckle under, if you don't bow down, you can't get along with them. It is their way or the highway.
Well, exactly. And the sense of, like I say, decency, of civility, and just complete regard for each other, one another, as a human being, has been replaced at the Thanksgiving table for some type of political debate and fight, which certainly does not do anything.
In which the participants, or at least one side of them, are uniformly and almost without fail arguing from specious positions that aren't even based on reality or understanding or comprehension. You know, witness what I was saying about the First and the Fourth Amendment early in the program.
Well, these people don't want to think. Thinking is too hard.
No, all they can do is regurgitate.
Exactly. All they want to do is to reiterate something that some idiot like Rush Limbaugh or Hannity or Combs has said over Fox News, and all they want to do is to not have any type of dialogue. Dialogue is completely out the window. What they want to do is to say dialogue is now replaced with domination of thought. And if I can out-shout you and if I can out-talk you, then I'm going to sit here and I'm going to, number one, ruin this Thanksgiving meal at the cost of the spirit of what Thanksgiving was designed to be. To be thankful to God that we're here, that we're alive, that we've survived another year to sit around the table and at least to enjoy some conviviality and the enjoyment of food and being thankful for what we have. And that is a recipe for disaster. Because that's right at the very basis of the entire country, and that is a family unit. They talk about the nuclear family. My God, that's a thing of the past. And by that, I mean, you know, the ability of a family to be able to sit down and to be thankful that they are there together for one more year in another's presence and to exercise a little humility and humanity. And not to allow these people to interfere, but they don't care because, number one, they're too damn stupid and they're too damn obstinate. And you know there's a difference between stupidity and being obstinate. Because I dare say that half of them may have some inkling of the idea that their arguments may be specious. And that really makes me very...
Well, see, I don't know that they do, Jim. And I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. It's part of how the authoritarianly turned mind works. If an authority figure hands them something, they take it as received wisdom as though it were coming from Sinai itself.
Here again, coordination. The Nazi policy of coordination. This is exactly what they did with people in the 30s. Of families in the 30s who lived in Germany when Hitler was coming to power and, you know, came into his ascendancy. It was either their way or the highway. And then, of course, after the highway, you know where that led. It led to genocide. It led to all types of horrible things. But we have learned nothing from this. Nothing at all from this.
No, because going back to a previous conversation we had, we have it somewhere in our psyche that as long as the uniforms aren't there, it isn't really fascism. And as we noted, I don't know how you get around that.
Well, I know enough about uniforms, but I know enough about civilian clothes, and believe you me, there used to be a difference. There used to be a difference. There really did. And I wanted to express my regards to Susan, and I hope she's doing well. I hope she's doing better. She lost her husband, and I always enjoy what she has to say. She has a lot of good things to say, as do many of your other people. And,
well, you are a gentleman, Jim, who learned his lessons of graciousness and took them to heart, and I thank you.
You know, here we have, as Charles Durning said in that movie, oh, my God, we've got Thanksgiving. Now, here comes fucking Christmas.
Score.
What are we going to do for Christmas?
I'm not sure, but I can tell you this. The fine folks over at Fox are already ginning up another phony war on Christmas. They declared today, in fact, on Fox and Friends in the morning, they declared that a school in Central Florida has banned the traditional Christmas colors of red and green from classrooms.
May I ask why?
Well, I think the better question would be, may I ask, is it actually true? Because it ain't. They reported that Heathrow Elementary in Orlando has said that the children cannot use red and green, the Christmas colors, and that the teachers are not going to let red and green in the classroom.
Why? I mean, what's wrong with red and green?
Well, it would all be well and good if it was true. But the folks at Media Matters called the school district, you know, in other words, they did journalism, and asked, you know, did that school really ban red and green? And the school district said, no, there's not an ounce of truth in it. There's not a word of truth in it. It didn't happen. It's not going on. But again, this ties all the way back to the beginning of the program, Jim. Fox News, remember, it's a brand name, not an adjective. They don't care about what's factually accurate, fair, and balanced, my left hind foot. Because, see, this is a dodge that they've run before. They just changed the name of the school. Because in 2005, Bill O'Reilly accused a school in Plano, Texas, of banning red and green clothing. And O'Reilly reported on it and declared that to be, and see, this is why I brought it up, because it's part of the overarching quality of our conversation, Jim. O'Reilly declared that to be fascism.
Oh, that's bullshit. That's just crazy. You know, this is almost boredom. And those whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make bored. And that is just absolutely nuts. That's not even worthy of mention.
But I guarantee you that there's a lot in the Fox demographic out there that are, even as we speak, Jim, having a hissy talking about how them godless secular humanists and that Islamo-fascist Obama from Kenya, he hates Christmas and Jesus and mangers and little shepherds. Tell me I'm lying to you. Tell me that's not true.
I can't even respond to that. But, I mean, I don't know. President Obama has definitely lost a lot of opportunities to present himself in a better light, and he has definitely let a lot of opportunities slip through his fingers. That is for sure. And he has played right into their hands. That is for sure.
Indeed. Jim, a great conversation. Thank you very much.
Well, I don't know about a great conversation, but, you know, I mean, what are they going to do next? Are they going to stop people from placing wreaths on graves and things at Christmas? Are they going to start into that, too?
No, but Fox will claim that it was done, even though it wasn't.
You know, I want to say one more thing. I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
Remember the story I emailed you about my mother?
Yes.
And the placing of the wreath?
Yes.
On that pilot officer's grave?
I do.
From World War II. Pilot Arthur Bradshaw.
Yes.
I wonder if they would try to stop her now if she were living.
Oh, no. No. No.
Oh, they might try to say something about, well, I mean, you know, why are you honoring somebody who is not a member of our own armed forces and things of that nature? What is your problem here?
Yeah, or, you know, I'm sure Fox could run a story about her being a sympathizer.
With a socialist British nation, which is rapidly becoming very unsocialist and coming apart, it seems. But here again, I digress, and this is not Sicily, and this is no story from Golden Girls, but I thank you for your time, and I have tried to... Oh, I wanted to make one other correction, pen and ink, if I could. I mentioned the other night about Taipei missiles. I meant West Coast, not East Coast.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I wanted to make that correction.
I think that was probably self-correcting because you you generally... That's not your nature to make a mistake like that. So I think people probably got the gist early on, but you're a big enough man to admit it. So, you know, that's a beautiful thing, Jim. That's something that doesn't exist a lot in this country anymore.
Well, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm going to tell you I'm wrong. If I make a mistake, I'm going to apologize for it and I'm going to correct it. And that has always been my nature, whether it's pen and ink or verbally or whatever. But there are some people, particularly the ones that you've been talking about, who are incapable of admitting any type of error, and instead of admitting the error, they're going to push it and push it and make it worse.
Right, because they dare not risk the idea of people figuring out their fallibility. And that goes back to authoritarian mindsets once again.
And they're scared of the truth.
Oh, they're terrified.
Absolutely. Just as much as a vampire would be of a cross or garlic or sunlight or whatever. My God in heaven, these people live in the dark, and they wish to continue living in the dark. And
at the same time, they curse the darkness with the lighter and the candles sitting right next to them.
And one other thing. They claim they're Christians and followers of the Prince of Peace. They are not. These are people who use that to their own advantage, and they use anything they can. What the Soviets used to call a Marxist-Leninist truth. It doesn't have to be true. Just as long as
it just has to. It just has to fit the philosophy.
And promote their own crazy programs and just absolute insanity. And here again, the policy of coordination. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye now. Yeah, about 25 minutes before the hour, an email came in, and I think this also fits in the scope of the conversation. An email came in from Kevin in Seoul. And bear with Kevin, because this actually, well, he says, in some perverse way, I'm glad to see our president has been treated the way he is by Radio Rwanda. This way, the world can see what it is to be an intelligent black man with ambition in America. The fact is, very few whites, even among the most liberal of circles, can accept black authority and power. Just look at the history of post-colonial Africa and the Caribbean. The million-dollar question every white male has to ask himself, can you accept a black man having the power to determine the well-being of yourself or of your family? We had to, for the past 400 to 500 years, from past experience, I've come to the determination that many Caucasian males would rather be abused by fellow Caucasians than be treated humanely by a person of color, especially someone who may be the descendant of slaves. And Brother Kevin, you, my friend, have said a mouthful. Going on to the mailbag, uh, Kevin continues, the office sociopath. He says, ever since the rise of the neocons, have you ever been around the office sociopath, you know, the Sarah Palin types with more ambition than skill? I just turned 40, and one of the healthiest things I ever did was to take stock of my life. I've come to the determination that the West does not value a person like me. I teach without being an authoritarian, which was something I could not do in America. In spite of all its issues, Asia is a more healthy environment to exist in. And perhaps that's because there's a certain valuing. There's a certain valuing to the concept of education in its own right. And again, what Jim said about their unwillingness to admit when they are wrong in the right wing, yeah, you want to. This is perfect. This is a perfect story of that. Because I mentioned earlier this business with Rush Limbaugh talking about how the true story of Thanksgiving is the rejection of socialism. Woo! So that's Rush Limbaugh. Now here, on the other hand, is Representative Todd Akin taking to the floor of the House of Representatives. He's not on Rush Limbaugh's show. He's not on anybody's show. He's not on the air. These are remarks delivered on the floor of the House of Representatives at the same time that the same message is being beamed across America by a $40 million a year half-deaf junkie, driven deaf by his abuse of prescription, or actually street narcotics. See, that's the trick. He was not addicted to prescription drugs. When you have to send your maid out with a cigar box with thousands of dollars in it, and she comes back with the same cigar box with pills in it, they didn't come from a pharmacy. They are no longer prescription drugs. They are street junk. And that's why Flush Limbaugh is a street drug junkie. Okay? So at the same time, literally, at the same time that this $40 million a year junkie is messaging over the public airwaves a complete and total fabrication of history that has no reflection reference to actual history, Representative Todd Akin, Repiglicken, is on the floor of the House. This is what it means to engage in coordinated messaging. And it just happens that the people who do it best in our country are a shameless gang of godforsaken, sociopathic, mendacious, goddamn liars. I give you Representative Todd Akin.
This year, it might be helpful to think back and say, there's more than Thanksgiving with the Pilgrims. There are a group of people who were willing to change the system, to think of different ideas. They came here and separated civil and church governments. They came here and created the model of a written constitution, the idea that the government is to be the servant of the people and that people have God-given rights, and it's the job of the government to protect those rights, as we have stated another 150 years later in our Declaration of Independence. They came here with the idea that, after trying socialism, that it wasn't going to work. They realized that it was unbiblical, that it was a form of theft, and so they pitched socialism out. They learned that in the early 1620s. And so we can thank these people because of the fact that they were innovative and had that spirit and desire. Even when half of them died and the Mayflower was going back, they clung to their vision. They had the courage to create a new civilization. And the words that Bradford prints in his diary says that as though that they felt that perhaps they'd lit a candle on a dark shore, and they felt that perhaps that they could be as stepping stones for people who would come after them to found a great nation. And so the dream that they had of coming here to do something new, unlike what Europe had done, that dream was very much in their hearts, very much part of their thinking as they scratched that existence on that lonely rock-strewn Massachusetts shoreline. And to this day, as we celebrate Thanksgiving, we can remember their first Thanksgiving when they put a few kernels of corn on a plate to remind them of how close to starving to death they had been at one time. So it's a beautiful story. There's a lot more to it, a lot more adventure to it. There was knife fights in cabins. I haven't had time to cover all of that with you. But the basics are there. This is a great bunch of Americans, a wonderful adventure story, and a time for us to give consideration to the fact that we also have been given a challenge of a beautiful land that was established on a firm foundation. And it's our job to keep it that way and to pass it on to our children, a government that is the servant of the people and not the master. God bless you all. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Drop dead. That's a cute little story, isn't it? That's a lovely story. That's a heartwarming tale of heroic white people who entered a... Did you hear that? Lit a candle in a dark land. It's heartwarming. It makes me all fuzzy. There's only one problem. It's a goddamn lie. The whole thing is a miserable tissue of lies. There isn't 10 cents worth of truth. No, screw truth. There isn't 10 cents worth of facts in what that rotten right-wing son of a bitch, self-made, said. He represents, by the way, the second district of Missouri. He is from St. Louis and St. Charles. I'm flummoxed with something like this. And it goes back to what I was talking about with Jim about the crazy people at Thanksgiving. I'm trying not to use the words that I try not to use, and I think it may be a losing battle, so if little Timmy and little Susie are around, run them out of the room, because Uncle Bob's going to drop some F-bombs. No, Uncle Bob isn't. This makes me insane. A country that just redoes its own history out of whole... God, all... Well, this is turning out to be some really good radio, Bob. You're spluttering and stammering and can't string two words together and form a full sentence. But this is what I got up to Thanksgiving morning. It was waiting for me. Suddenly I had an occupant for the empty chair of hate. God bless you at Thanksgiving, Brother Aiken. Reminds me of that great Buddy Hackett line from It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. You know, I like everybody. I try to get along. I don't want to make anybody not like me. I think well of everyone. But not you! I want you to drop dead. You know, there's lying on people, and then there's lying on the dead people. And lying about the dead is almost somehow more offensive. Jesus! Sickening. Let's just go through a little bit of this.
Thing this year, it might be helpful to think back and say, there's more than Thanksgiving with the Pilgrims. There were a group of people who were willing to change the system, to think of different ideas. They came here and separated civil and church governments.
No, they didn't. They came here and set up a theocracy. They were so malevolent and so awful that shortly thereafter, with the establishment of Massachusetts government, they passed a law that said if you are in the clergy, you can't be in the government. Because the theocracy had been that poisonous. I hate these BS stories about the flippin' pilgrims. They didn't leave Europe because of needing religious tolerance. They left Europe because they couldn't tolerate anybody else. They were the Fred Phelpses of the 17th century. It wasn't that everybody was being mean to the Puritans. It was that the Puritans were being mean to everybody else. And that's a fact, Jack. Separated.
In here and created the model of a written constitution, the idea that the government is to be the servant of the people and that people have God-given rights and it's the job of...
Wrong again!
...the government to protect those rights, as we have stated another 150 years later in our Declaration of Independence. They came here with the idea that, after trying socialism, that it wasn't going to work. They...
Jesus, this is the part where I just run around screaming naked in the yard. They left Europe to abandon socialism? What, Edith, huh? This makes my brain hurt. This makes my spleen ache. Apparently this isn't doing other people any good either. Sandra writing in, the pilgrims? Did he mean William Bradford? What the... I'm glad I'm not alone. Socialism? It wouldn't even be conceptualized for another 150 years, and it wouldn't become politically viable for another 100 after that, socialism! But again, Rush Limbaugh made that argument on his show, the same argument, boys and girls. And there's an elected member of the government making the same argument on the floor of the House. Marmalade, come here. I bet they never taught you this in them government schools, did they? Do you know that? Do you know the pilgrims? We owe more than we know. We owe the pilgrims more than we thought we did. Because they defeated socialism. But wait. It's not just that socialism is bad. Hold on. Oh, for the love of Jesus, hold on.
It wasn't going to work. They realized that it was unbiblical.
Socialism was unbiblical! Bust my buttons! I know, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, but just a minute. Let's see. Acts chapter 2. There it is. We'll be wanting the King James Version because that's the language God speaks. Here it is. Talking about the early church, this is the second chapter of Acts. Talking about early Christian sects. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, and in breaking of bread, and in prayers. And fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done by the apostles. This is the part where we pay attention. This is verse 44 of the second chapter of Acts. And all that believed were together, and had all things common, and sold their possessions and goods, and parted them to all men as every man had need.
And they, continuing daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved. And all that believed were together, and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods, and parted them to all men, as every man had need. From each, according to his ability, to each, according to his need. Where have I heard that before? Yeah. Because Brother Aiken, I'm sorry, Representative Aiken, says that the pilgrims were rejecting socialism because it was unbiblical. 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 This is an astonishing, astonishing degree of either willful ignorance or deliberate falsehood. And since he is a follower of Christ, he's a Christian, I tend to think he's more than likely being deliberately untruthful.
It was a form of theft. And
socialism was a form of theft. So they
pitched socialism out. They learned that in the early 1620s. And so we can thank these people because of the fact that they were innovative and had that spirit and desire. Even when half of them died and the Mayflower was going back, they clung to their vision. They had the courage to create a new civilization. And the words that Bradford...
Bull. They had no intention of creating a new civilization. They didn't want to be around other people who didn't believe the way they thought everybody else should believe. But that did not stop them from believing at their very core that they were first, foremost, and always Englishmen. Jude sending along a link. She says, check out his bio. And she notes they even violate their own Ten Commandments, but as they believe the chosen can lie for the better good. Trying to go to my happy place. Todd Aiken, Republican, U.S. Congress, got him a picture of Mount Rushmore right there on his website, and it says, "The Courage to Lead, a Time for American Patriots." Now, oh, listen to this. Oh, my God. It's time to get out of here, but oh, my God, you got to hear this. Our founders started our country as a great experiment in freedom and self-government. Over the past 380 years, America was built by noble people who had noble plans, who established one nation under God. Even though that, you know, 1950, but yeah. They came from many countries and at considerable risk. These brave souls had the courage to live the unique dreams their Creator put into their hearts, and the impossible became possible as America was built one dream at a time. We came to call it the American Dream. We have come to live in a vast, prosperous, and beautiful land. For many years, we have been a blessing to people the world over.